Welcome everyone to the One More Game Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Jeremy Culver, aka Darcy, and with me is the California Thirst Quencher, Pete Legia. Pete, how you doing, man?
Man, it's finally spring. And not only is it spring, but it's starting to feel like spring. And that's the key part. Because I don't know how much you've been keeping up with the weather over here in Southern California, but we've gotten a lot of rain. And to be fair, we've needed it. This is like the rainfall that was happening, even though it was like, I think it was mostly record breaking. A lot of the rain we were getting, it was a lot of rain that we actually needed. Obviously not to this extent because the ground isn't actually set up because it's been in a drought for so long, but it's nice that it's starting to be like 70s again, starting to feel like spring, you know, 60s, 70s. It's not being like the high 30s, low 40s at night. You got baseball going on now. NBA is starting to hit the playoffs. NHL is starting to hit the playoffs. You know, it's like the, like there's 2 months in sports specifically where like just everything is like happening at once. And it's like October and April. It's like just like five different sports are converging all at the same time. That's pretty cool. And we had WrestleMania last week. That's one reason why we were off. Don't let anybody tell you different.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. That's exactly what happened. Which WrestleMania was actually really awesome. I said it in our group, as you know. For me, one of the best WrestleManias in recent memory, as well as in my opinion, one of the best pay per views I've watched in recent memory. It was really good.
Oh, I think based on WrestleMania just specifically, I can't speak to like card in general, but like I think it was got to be probably top five of all time, especially night one. Like if you all encompassing, like especially the way it ended, like you could argue like how high that is, but like night one especially is like top five WrestleManias. I think I gotta be easy at this point.
Oh yeah, it was phenomenal. I really enjoyed it, and so I hope everyone else, if you watched WrestleMania, you enjoyed it. And I agree with you also, Pete. It is great that the weather feels good today because it was very nice getting outside and being like, I actually can consider whether I want to wear my coat or not. I mean, I still needed to wear my coat because, of course, I live in Minnesota, and so it's not like that warm just yet, but it was warm enough that it was like, I can unzip this. I could walk around and feel good, and yeah. It was really good. But everybody, thank you so much for tuning in here to the One More Game Podcast. This is a podcast that is centered around making sure you're informed about all the video game news happening around the world, whether it is PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo, or PC. If there's news that you need to know about, we'll make sure that you know about it. When you're listening to this on your podcast service, make sure you hit the subscribe button or the follow button, depending on what your service offers. And if your podcast service allows reviews, please leave a 5-star review and tell everyone why you love the One More Game Podcast, because we really enjoy bringing this to you each and every week. If you'd like to be part of the show by asking a question or suggesting a topic for discussion, head on over to pressstartnews.net/onemoregame and fill out that submission form, and your submission could be used on the next episode. Or you could drop it off live in chat while we record it over at youtube.com/@pressstart28. Or, of course, it still should work, the pressstart28, just generic slash. That should still be working. I don't know when YouTube is actually going to discontinue that, but I need to get in the habit of saying youtube.com/@pressstart28, because at some point they likely will stop that redirect. But everybody, if this is your first time to the podcast, welcome to the podcast. I hope you enjoy your listen, and I hope you enjoy your stay. But if you are returning, you already know what it is. We start off every single podcast talking about what we've been playing lately. So Pete, what have you been playing lately?
So I've been playing the crap out of Octopath Traveler 2, gotten back on that wagon. God, that game is a lot of fun. I just want to touch on it really quick. Just the characters like really resonate with me. The changes they made from the first one are like not significant. There are some, you know, changes, but not drastic ones, but they just make the game feel a lot better. And I already liked Octopath Traveler 1, but it felt there was like kind of like a clunkiness, kind of like a plottingness to it. And this one kind of has that too, but like it feels a lot more enjoyable what's going on and stuff. So I just want to touch on that. The game I really want to talk about is as you know, since you've been working, you've been a workaholic the last several months since you got back on the wagon. Work's been all over the place. My schedule's been kind of whack. So I've been playing not a whole lot of games outside of Octopath on the console. I've been more playing like on my phone and stuff. So I got on this game, Cardfight Vanguard Zero. I talked about a different Vanguard game that was on Steam that was worth 70-80 bucks. It was actually a lot of fun, but I wouldn't recommend people dropping that kind of money. This one is a free to play. The free to play moniker is always a card game, and they're actually relatively okay with the free to play to start out, to get you like a deck to, if you want to play the card game itself. The art's all kind of like anime based. The game's anime based. It has an anime that's actually, the game itself is, I think, 2011, 12 years ago. And the game itself, especially in paper, is a lot of fun. The game on the phone, Vanguard Zero, is a little different. It plays out slow. There are some decent, significant changes from if you were used to playing it in paper. It's mostly similar. There's a mechanic where you have five rear guards on your main card, which is your Vanguard. And whenever your Vanguard attacks, it does what's called a trigger check. And so you reveal a top card, and certain cards have this thing called a trigger, and they have special effects if you flip over the cards that have this thing on there. So that's a level of variance. So like, there's a little more variance involved, and besides just drawing the cards, like there is in a game like Magic, that kind of builds in, like maybe like you can high roll and possibly win a couple of games that you otherwise wouldn't be able to, because your opponent's decks are so much better. The farther you go, like having 75-80% fun with the game, the last 20% is just anytime I go on to ranked. Because the higher on ladder I've gotten, the more I've gotten to face decks where they're kind of like combo decks that, but because the way the game is, there's no real interaction on your opponent's turn. The only points of interaction were if you play certain cards that have this ability called Intercept, they have to attack it before they attack your Vanguard to deal you damage. And once you get 6 damage, you lose the game. So that's how the game goes. You can also theoretically deck your opponent. That's not really how that works. The games don't usually go on that long. That's one of the things that I kind of like about it. Kind of similar with Marvel Snap. is that they're usually like only like 4 or 5 turns per person. For the most part, some of them go a little longer, but it's rare that you deck your opponent, or you deck yourself in this case. But because you can't interact on your opponent's turn and they make some of these combos, you don't have any way to stop it once they get their combo going, which is kind of like, if you don't know what their combo is, it's kind of like, oh, so they did the thing and I lose and I can do nothing about it. And that's not very fun, because one of the worst things about games in general and card games specifically is when you play a whole game and then you get to the end and none of your decisions mattered, like at all. And it seems the higher I get on the ladder, there's more and more of that happening. And of course, this is where the free to play part becomes BS. All the decks that are like this are the ones that like, oh, you have to have the rarest of rare cards, and you actually have to like grind your way over like, you know, months and months and possibly like a year plus to actually get some of these cards. To have the ability to craft them. And then it's like, oh, okay, cool. And by then, of course, I come out with like a new set like every month or two. So it's like, oh, well, now these decks that I've been grinding for, they're obsolete. So I got to move on to the next one. So, but I really enjoyed the anime when it first came out years ago. So the storyline is for single players kind of based on that. So that's kind of cool. They got some like events that you can play by yourself. So you don't have to do the rank ladder thing. There are some specific like daily missions that you have to do that involve playing rank, but now they got this thing called training group, which they didn't used to. And a lot of those, like, you either play ranked or in the training group thing where you can play against AI or other people that aren't playing theoretically meta decks. So that's a lot kind of cool and a neat wrinkle too. So I don't recommend it really unless you're looking for a card game, or if you want play the anime or play it in paper and you're looking for something to do on mobile. But in general, it's kind of like another one of those, oh, it's free to play, but is it really, kind of things. And one of the typical experiences. But I mean, it eats away some of the day when I have like the few minutes of free time that I do have. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, you were the one who introduced me to Card
Vanguard. Yeah, I don't think I talked about it on the show. So I kind of snuck away past my New Year's resolution of having a new game every day, because I don't believe I talked about it on the podcast before. But if I did... If I did, commenters, you could say I screwed up and, I broke it after 3 months, like people going to the gym. So whatever.
No, you've done a good job so far because you did bring up Octopath Traveler 2 before. But yeah, you are going to hit a wall. We know that's going to happen at some point. And Kairu Gaming, of course, said in the chat, you know, that we have that. He does not like card games, and he especially can't get into digitally, and I totally understand that. Some people, card games don't get it.
I feel like he says that every time he's in the chat and I bring up a card game.
He does. He is just
a reminder.
He is a bona fide hater. As much as I love the guy, he is a bona fide hater, so I just have to point that out. But, I do really like card games, but as you know, right, I'm not a big deck builder. But I did enjoy the little bit that we played of Cardfight Vanguard back in the day when we played, you know, had it physically. So I might actually check that out and see how it feels with that.
That depends on the list. Don't worry, I'll get there before you ask.
Yeah. So, but I totally understand it. As you said, most of those card games, right, the free-to-play aspect, you know, really comes into question because, like, you need, you know, to if you're going to play against people online all the time, you really need the cards to work. And grinding for them is not always going to work out for you how much you need for those.
Yeah, it's really rare that because it's just not monetarily beneficial for them, it's really rare that they have, like, a cheap quote-unquote deck that like actually is successful for more than, like, once you get to the higher ranks, maybe in the lower ranks because other people have the same deck, but it's a little more difficult to do it in that kind of instance. But
yeah, at the end of the day, video game companies got to make their money, right? That's how it is. For myself, I actually played not a lot of, like, time in games, but I played a lot of different games this week for various reasons. Sometimes it was because I wanted to play, like, in a certain way. So, like, for instance, you know, one of the nights I had like 20 minutes and I just wanted to lay in bed and I wanted to play a game. So obviously I can't just bring my, you know, console and stuff into my bedroom to play, because that's not where I have everything set up. So sometimes it was just about, like, where I was at. But I'm going to bring up, like, two games in particular. So one of them was the one that I streamed on Tuesday, which was Meet Your Maker. That is a brand new game that came out from Behavior Interactive. They're the same people who do the Dead by Daylight games. And Meet Your Maker, the way that I would kind of describe it is a, like, search, a capture the flag in a sense type of a game. And I say that very loosely, whereas people will create dungeons or bases, however, I can't remember how they describe them in the game, with traps and various, like, creatures inside to try to stop you from being able to go into their base and finding this core and getting the core and leaving with it for your own base and for creating things. And so a lot of it is about, like, sneaking around, really trying to learn or memorize the map for the traps that it is, because as soon as you die, if you die from a trap, you start at the beginning and you have to re-go through, and it basically, like, sets the world, resets. It was a lot of fun. I did enjoy it. I had a good time with it, but as I did mention in the stream, I don't know if I had enough fun that I would want to keep playing it over and over. Like, it was a good game, and I think especially because it's a PS Plus game, it's one of the PS Plus games for the month, I totally think it was a great addition to PS Plus, and I think those that have it should go claim it and try it out to see how it works for them. But it was one of those things where it was like, while I was having a lot of fun, for me, and knowing how much time commitment I have to video games at the moment, it was like, I don't know if it's going to, you know, supersede any of the other games that I want to play and get through at the moment. It's a game that I feel also I can jump into and play at any moment. It's very dependent, though, on how many people in the community create maps, because that is the thing. Like, you go and you explore the maps of others that have created it. So, like, if you created a map, then I could go through and try to take out your base. And obviously, the game encourages, you know, in a sense, is wanting a lot of people to play and create maps. And then, of course, you can go in, even if they no longer play, right? You can still go through their map. But that is the, you know, is going to be the longevity of the game is how many more maps are always being created. Because obviously there will come a point in time where you may go through everybody's maps. Who knows if that will actually happen, but there is that chance, right? And it was really cool in that regard. And like I said, I loved the fact that like it even shows you the name of the person's map that you're exploring. So like I played through four maps. One was definitely like a map that was created by the team. And then there were three that were created by users. And I could just tell just based off of the name and the logo next to the name, which was it. But it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And again, I think people should go check it out. We'll see how much I continue to play it. The other game, though, that I played was I just had this random itch to go back and play a Final Fantasy game. And so I went back and booted up Final Fantasy 12. And Pete, I found out from, of course, booting it back up, the last time I booted up Final Fantasy 12 was in 2019. Was in July 2019.
Isn't it always great when you see those things pop up and you're just like, damn, has it really been that long?
Yeah, it was that same thought. I was like, wow, I did not realize it's been that long since I booted this game up. But it was I enjoyed it. And I feel like for some reason, I understood the Gambit system better than I did when I was playing it. So real quickly, for everyone that doesn't know, Final Fantasy XII was basically built with the mindset of an MMO in mind. But of course, it is a single player game. And to help you with that MMO aspect that they were going for with the game, which originally released on the PS2, I was playing the Zodiac Age, which is the remaster, is they incorporated what's called the Gambit system. And the Gambit system is basically a tiered step programming for your teammates, as well as you can build it for yourself, your party leader. And it is basically a... You put a condition. So for instance, it'd be like foe equals 100% health. If it hits foe and they have 100% health, then of course you will use the action like attack. And so like it'll follow that process. And then whatever, based off of how it is that if it doesn't come down, or basically if like the first factor that it was supposed to do. So for instance, it was like, hey, you know, foe at 100%, this is one of my setups. So it's like foe at 100%, do steal. If the enemy I approach is not actually at 100% health, it will skip that and go to the second one. And basically, it'll keep going down the list until it finds an action that it's supposed to do. And it'll keep recycling through that. So I actually like understood it better this time around than I used to, because that used to be my biggest gripe, was I just could not get the Gambit system down. And that's not to say that I have it down yet, but I just understood it better this time. So like I built a system that actually worked and I was having a good time. But I'm sure like the further I get into the game, I'm going to get back to that like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. I don't know how to actually do this shit. So we'll see, of course. But I'm actually really enjoying it. And I think that is going to be the game I am going to try to sit and beat. I know how it ends because I did watch a video many years ago when I thought I would never play Final Fantasy XII until they actually remastered it. So I know how it ends, but I want to, of course, experience it myself. And that's where... like, I'm kind of like this. I think this is the game I'm going to play, especially trying to go into June when Final Fantasy 16 rolls out. And Pete, you know, like that's a day one buy that I'm like, as soon as I get that, I'm going to play through that one. Kind of wanting to do 12 to kind of like be that precursor, even though we're a couple of months away now, but we're only 2 months from that. So I have some time to beat it, but also knowing my schedule, I may not have time to beat it. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's wild that a quarter of the year is already gone. So who's your party? Who's your main party in FF12?
So admittedly, I do the same thing with FF12 that I do with like Pokemon, where it's like I like try to keep everybody at the same level because of the situation, just like with other games, it's like I want to make sure that whenever I need one of these party members, they're ready to go, and it's not like there's that huge level discrepancy. But like the party that I typically rock, I will say it that way, is I typically roll with Balthier, then I use Fran, Pinello, and Ash. And the reason I do that is because of in the Zodiac Age, it introduces the job system. So for in the original PS2, there wasn't a jobs, like everyone had like their role in the game. In the Zodiac Age, they introduced a job system where you can basically make Balthier the character that you want them to fill. So instead of like Balthier is just this range type of character, right? It's like, I want Balthier to be a knight / white mage. So I kind of want them to be a paladin. And like, that's how it is. And so like how I built them is Balthier is a red battle mage. And then I can't remember what Fran's actual like job is, but like she's like basically a tank in it. Because I gave Bosch the knight class. So it's not that one, but like, it's similar to the knight class. Pinello is basically my white mage, and then Ash is my black mage. So Balthier does a lot of the damaging, but also the time manipulation. Fran takes in a lot of damage and soaks up the aggro for players, and then obviously Pinello there to heal and resurrect people, while Ash is consistently doing magic. And so that's kind of how I have my setup. But
Vaughn's running around telling everybody he's Bosch von Ronsenburg.
Exactly. He's actually a ninja in mine. His class is the ninja in mine. So like he's doing exactly that. He is undercover. He's sneaking around being like, I'm Bosch von Ronsenburg.
It's the only thing he's good for.
Exactly.
I started laughing when you said I treat it like Pokemon really quick before we get into our topic, because just imagine you saying, Pinello, I choose you.
Yes, that's exactly what I do.
Pinello.
Ash.
That's why I started giggling. For whatever reason's where my mind went. Anyway.
That's great. All right, but everybody, we've been talking about what we've been playing lately, so let's get into the episode. So we are doing another discussion-based episode here. I was thinking about this topic for quite a while, and I think it just kind of came at a great time for it, partially because of getting back into Final Fantasy XII, as well as a game that I played that I'm going to talk about here as well in this discussion. But we are talking about the top five bad guys of video games for us. So I'm going to give the precursor real quick. My top five may actually not be my top five. It's one of those, like, these were the first five that kind of came to mind as I was thinking of this, as well as...
That's kind of how it went with me, too.
Yeah, and as well as my top five is definitely not in order. It's more so, like, again, these are, like, the five that kind of came to mind as I was thinking of this.
I put mine in an order, but yeah.
Well, there you go.
So I do have a difference from there, but...
I do not have that order. But basically, we're going to talk about... We're going to talk about the villains that we kind of like love to hate. And so for kind of laying the groundwork for people to understand, this does not mean these are the main villains of the games. These are just any of the villains or antagonists that you had to overcome. And I kind of put that in there because, of course, there's sometimes that minor side character, that minor villain who, you know what? You really like them. They weren't the big bad, but they made such an impact in the story that you wanted to include them. So with that being out of the way, I'm going to start first. We're going to do our typical approach, Pete, where it's like one of us goes, the other one goes, and kind of goes back and forth in that regard. And I'm going to start first because, again, I just talked about, hey, I'm going to bring up a game that I did play this week that kind of helped with also bringing this topic up. And that is The Legend of Dragoon. So, as we talked about last week and in this week, right, the Legend of Dragoon just recently got added to the PS Plus Premium tier on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. You also can buy The Legend of Dragoon by itself. It's $10, so you don't have to subscribe to it. But part of that was I did boot up this week, The Legend of Dragoon. I had some time and was sitting down and decided to dive into it a little bit and see how things go. And I love it. It's real quick, Kairu in the chat was was like, does tabletop RPGs count? Technically, if you were part of this discussion, yes, you could use tabletop RPGs as part of it. But, you know, I don't have a tabletop RPG in my one, I will admit there. But I was playing The Legend of Dragoon, and even though I didn't get to the point where this villain reveals himself just yet, it just immediately booting it up, I was like overwhelmed by the nostalgia factor and like the experience with it. And so like my first one is Lloyd from The Legend of Dragoon. So Lloyd is basically the main antagonist that you have to fight in this game. You know, I will say, without spoiling things, for those that maybe are playing Legend of Dragoon for the first time, even though, as we did say last week, right, this is a really old game. He does make his presence known early on in the game, but he doesn't reveal himself until later. I think it's like at the end of Disc 1 is when you finally like get to see Lloyd as Lloyd for the first time. So I just remember, like, especially with Lloyd, I loved... this game came out in 1999. I probably played it in 1999. Maybe it was in 2000, but I was like 7, 8 years old. And like, I just thought the look of Lloyd was so damn cool. And like, I loved his demeanor of this, like, basically don't give a fuck badass guy. Like, that was just like, I don't care about your emotions or feelings or like whatever. Like, I'm going to just do what I want to do and slaughter who I want to slaughter. And like, that's how it is. Like, it's just that, you know, that's the way it is. And so like his battles were so hard. I remember like when I finally triumphed over him in Disc 1, I was like so over the moon because I was like, fuck yes, this guy was so difficult. But like, I just love the look of him, the approach of him. And so like Lloyd was definitely that one of the first, like, in my opinion, one of the very first bad guys that I like really connected with. And like, he was also one of the first bad guys where like I wanted him on my team. Like, it was like, I know you're the bad guy, but like, I want you to be in my party. Like, quit being the bad guy. Join me now. And he doesn't do it. Spoiler alert there, but he was one of the first ones. So like,
he does, I totally help you recommend, out in the end,
kind of. I mean, but yeah, I want basically anyone who has the chance, go play Legend of Dragoon. Again, it's an old game. The port is not like a remake, but it is still a fantastic game. And I will admit, I cannot wait to get back to fighting Lloyd and through the adventures in Legend of Dragoon. So that's my first one.
My first one, number 5 for me, because like I said, I actually got these in an order. It's actually kind of difficult. So I usually, when we do ranking lists, I put personal restrictions on this a little bit to make it more interesting. Also to like make him different. So like I made it so like I couldn't use games from the same series or use the villains from the same series or stuff like that. I tried to differentiate a little bit. So my 5 was a little more difficult. I did cheat a little bit because I have two Final Fantasy villains. I mean, they're from different games and never interact except, I guess, for Dissidia technically. So I did cheat a little bit there, but I didn't want like 5 JRPG villains. I didn't want like, you know, like a bunch of like, you know, the Final Fantasy villains or whatever. So I kind of went that route. So my number 5 is Captain Copernicus Leslie Quark. You might ask who that is. That is Captain Quark from the Ratchet and Clank series. So Quark is... In the first Ratchet and Clank game, I remember playing, and he's the guy you're trying to find. He's supposed to be like the resident superhero for what the galaxy that you're in. And when Chairman Drek is trying to take pieces of a bunch of different planets to make his own planet, which would thereby destroy those planets and send them hurtling into the sun, you're trying to find Captain Quark. Based on his weekly radio show that he broadcasts across the galaxy. So it's like, oh, well, the radio show broadcasts from this planet, so we'll go to that planet. And a big part of the first first half of the game is you trying to find him. Well, you finally find him, and he's in league with Chairman Drek, it turns out. As you learn more about him from the first game and through subsequent games, he's not very heroic and just kind of takes credit for a lot of other people's accomplishments for the most part. He's also really bumbling. He's not necessarily evil as much as an antagonist. And by the third game, he's kind of on your side, but also still kind of like you go when they when he makes like in the third game, you're fighting against a villain called Dr. Nefarious, who's one of Quirk's original supervillains, probably supposed to be his greatest enemy. And whenever Quirk comes up with a plan for him and the team, he sends Ratchet to do all the dirty work and Ratchet to like going through all the dangerous missions to hopefully get killed. And then at the end, he's like, he shows up and be like, haha, we triumph because of my genius plan. And Ratchet's like, bro, what the hell? I just did all this stuff. Shut up. And the rest of the most of the rest of the crew understands that Quirk is just kind of a nincompoop. So he's kind of more lovable by the end of his character arc at the end of three, but he is more antagonistic than protagonistic in most of his appearances. And I just really enjoy the kind of like character he is, of him being like a twist on the original or on the usual like superhero arc, where he's like more villainous. He's very petty. He's very vindictive. He's jealous, very jealous a lot of the time. He has a lot of like realistic qualities, but at the end of the day, also he kind of like generally wants to do the right thing by the end of all of it. Not really apparent in the first game and not even the second game, but by the third game, he's like, you know, I really do want to actually try to do good. And that's kind of nice to see. And then I think by the fourth game, he's back to his bumbling ways of like just being jealous of Ratchet and, you know, whatever. But his character arc was kind of fun for the most part. And it was also really fun beating the crap out of him, too, because of how much of a bumbling doofus and a jerk he is. So, you know, that's my number five. I had a lot of fun beating the crap out of Captain Quark.
You know, I have actually never played a Ratchet and Clank game. So, like,
I have to assume that they're on PS Plus, so.
A number of them are. I do know that. And obviously, they gave out a while ago the Ratchet and Clank for the PS4 game, I think, which was, like, a remake or a remaster of the first one.
Yeah.
And I did have it.
I didn't play all of that, but I found out that's actually told from Captain Quark's point of view. A lot of the things that I had issues with, because I hadn't actually beat the whole game. I did beat the original one. I didn't beat that one. A lot of the issues I had with that game were actually because Quark is not a truthful narrator.
Okay.
So a lot of the changes are like, oh, I get it now. That's what they were doing.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. So I was actually kind of interested in going back and playing it, but yeah, that's another one.
Yeah, at some point I do want to go and play them, because especially with the Kraken Time, the newest one that came out for the PS5. That one looks really, really good. So, like, I do want to...
They're all a lot of fun. I will say that they're all kind of played out the same. So if you played one, you kind of played them all. The weapons change a little bit, but in general, they're kind of all the same. But, I mean, it is a fun, like, hack and slash, just going around, just blowing up a bunch of shit. So, like,
yeah,
I've always had a blast with that. It's always been fun.
So I'm going to quickly get out this. So it's one of those things where I tried my best not to pull a lot of from the same series, because as you know, Pete, I could fill this entire list with like Final Fantasy characters, right?
Yeah, that's my problem. That's why I forced myself not to.
Yeah, and so I did a very similar thing, but I will tell you I have two Final Fantasy in this list.
Sure, I have two.
That is something I think we should do for a future discussion episode of this, is like top five of the Final Fantasy bad guys. Because this morning at breakfast, I was sitting there going like, oh, should I switch this one?
We should do like a snake draft of it.
There you go. We should do that. Yeah, that's a good idea. But I kept sitting there going like, oh, should I switch this person out? Should I switch this person in? You know, X, Y, and Z. So the person that I went with originally and I considered switching out, but I left in, is my next entry. And I think it's no surprise for a lot of people. And that is, of course, Sephiroth for Final Fantasy VII. Similar in nature with Final Fantasy VII, when Sephiroth first like makes their appearance like in the game, I was instantly like hooked by their look and the way that they portray Sephiroth. You know, kind of going with what Kalwu said here in our chat, which is Jeremy likes bad boys. Yes, I do, because apparently I like the bad boy Sephiroth.
I said that. Calvary said that Sephiroth is basic.
Oh, there you go. Sephiroth is basic. Get out of here. Sephiroth is iconic. It's while he's basic now, yes, like in a sense, but Sephiroth is iconic, and that's the big factor of it. Like, he did so much in Final Fantasy VII, and again, like, with its popularity, I think, did so much in here. I'm ignoring the chat right now because, yes, I do agree with what Kalu is saying, but it's the reason why, again, I left it in here because of the iconicness of the factor and what Sephiroth brings to the table. The Muramasa sword is like, again, iconic in nature. The destruction of Niflheim is iconic in nature, and like, who will, like, everyone knows the cutscene of Sephiroth walking through the fire. And like, again, even in the PS1 era, where like everyone was this like kind of blockiness character, that looked ultimately badass, right? And it was just like, this is great. And of course, like, it drove you to why it was so, like, again, that importanceness of the villain, right? The drive to actually stop the villain. And that's something that, like, Sephiroth did so well in Final Fantasy VII. Yes, there are other Final Fantasy characters that did it better. And again, that would be something that I would want to do in a future discussion. But he did so much, and again, is such an iconic character. It's why he's one of the most beloved Final Fantasy characters, even in general, not just antagonists, but just in general, that I was one of those things where it's like, I feel like I had to put him on the list. And of course, we're hoping, crossing fingers, that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth comes out this December, or this winter, like it's supposed to, and we'll get to see Sephiroth more in the Final Fantasy VII Remake trilogy. But like, I had to put Sephiroth in this list.
That'll be a day one buy for me, by the way. You're talking about Final Fantasy 16. You know what the funny part about Sephiroth in that game is?
What?
For like most of the game, you're actually fighting Genova and chasing Genova.
Yeah. Because sure.
Sephiroth's just in the northern crater. So basically, like, you don't even confront him or like talk to him directly until like you get to the northern crater in the third disc. Like, everything else is always just Genova dressed as him. Mm-hmm. I didn't even really figure that out until like 10 years later when I was like reading up on it. I'm like, oh, well, that makes a lot more sense of what was going on there. Anyway, I also have a Final Fantasy VII villain, and it's not Genova, though. This one has nothing to do with villainy or him being awful or what, or like just any of that, like the character development. I just really loved the boss fight, and I really loved everything about the sequence involving it. It's the diamond weapon.
Oh, okay.
That's the selection. Like I said, the whole thing, so the sequence starts, you just found out that Aerith had called Holy. I believe it's after you got the I don't know if you actually got the white materia. I don't think you did, because it's sunk with Aerith, if I recall.
Yes.
But you were able to figure out that Aerith had called Holy, but Sephiroth is restricting Holy from actually stopping Meteor from destroying the planet. So you just leave the city of the ancients and Bugenhagen, I think, basically to his death by age at that point. I don't think you see him again after that. Maybe you can if you go back there. But so you get out, and Cait Sith, the traitor done by or controlled by Reeve of Shinra, who's mostly on your team at this point, calls you and says, like, hey, Midgar's about to get destroyed. Also, they have this giant weapon that's going to fire using all of the Mako energy that's produced by all the reactors and to destroy the barrier in the northern crater. Also, diamond weapons attacking, and it's really big. And you're trying to fly around, and when you're in the high wind, if you try to like get around into it, you just get bounced back. So you have to do so. That part I always thought was really cool. And then you land on the beach, and this thing just slowly lumbers towards you. This, as it gets closer, it's clear this thing is a mammoth. This thing is like, in all reality, you should have no hope of ever beating or fighting or even really damaging this thing. And then it comes to the thing, and the boss fight is just so badass. The attacks the enemy uses are like really awesome looking. They look really great. Your party's just like struggling to just kind of just buy time for the cannon in Midgar. against also your enemies in Shinra to be able to charge it up to fire to actually kill the diamond weapon, because you're not actually because I had to recharge it after destroying the barrier in the Northern Crater the first part, or the right before the boss fight. And then at the end of it, after you finally delay it enough and it gets killed, it fires, and also at the same time, it gets retconned in the Advent Children, but destroys the Shinra headquarters, or most of it, and seemingly kills the president, Rufus Shinra, at that point. There, which ends up beginning the downfall of Shinra Company as a whole. And that whole sequence is just, it stuck with me, like, when it first happened, because it was just, like, not something I expected. It wasn't really anything that had happened up till that point in the game. Like, you were mostly just kind of, like, going through all the towns in the first disc, and then the second disc, you're trying to get to the Northern Crater to get to Sephiroth, and then Cloud vanishes, and it's, like, you got the story, backstory, you finally figure out what actually happened. And all of a sudden, it's just like, oh, I gotta fight Godzilla. And it's just, like, just... I don't want to say random, because the weapons were revealed, and, like, you know, theoretically, like, some of them would have to have a bigger impact than Ruby and Emerald being, unbeatable side bosses. But it was just, like, the whole sequence I just thought was really cool, and it's one of my favorite sequences in, like, all of Final Fantasy that I've ever played. That whole, just from the moment it appears to the moment it gets blasted with a cannon, Rufus Shinra dies, asterisk. And then, but everything leading up to that, and then you just end it all with a big ass parachute into Midgard to get a control of the situation, because you have to go and stop Hojo finally, who also deserves an ass kicking.
yeah, for sure. Yeah, the diamond is an awesome choice. I actually really like that decision there. I won't lie, I was kind of imagining when you first were, like, laying the groundworks for your pick, I was like, is this Rufus? Like, because you're like, you know, not because of this, but I love the boss fight and all this. And I'm like, you know, in my mind,
boss fight was fun too.
Yeah, I was going through my mind, I'm like going through boss fights, and, like, all of a sudden, once you said, you know, diamond, I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I totally get it. That makes a good one. So the next one I'm going to pick, again, is getting away from Final Fantasy. I'm going to save my other Final Fantasy for a bit later, but this one, I feel like it's one of those, if you played this game, which I know a lot of people did, like, you'll instantly know why, this is my choice. But the next one I'm going with is, Rodrigo Borgia, the main antagonist in Assassin's Creed 2. All right. So, Rodrigo is, like, I mean, again, like, I always remember this from the review of Assassin's Creed 2 back when it came out. So, like, Assassin's Creed 2 basically is what helped Assassin's Creed end up, like, blowing up and, like, Ubisoft turning it into an annual franchise. But, like, I will never forget IGN's review of Assassin's Creed 2, where it literally says, I mean... Who doesn't love a fight where you actually fight the Pope? And, like, that's what happens with Rodrigo Borgia. He is such a manipulative political figure throughout this entire game. And he's always, in a sense, one step ahead of Ezio every step of the way in this game. But it's like, the voice actor for it, which he was voice acted by Manuel Tadros, he did so well that it's just like, I hated this character so much. Like, I just could not stand this guy, that I just, every time I saw him, I was like, can I just kill him already? Like, I just want to kill him already. Obviously, it's an Assassin's game. Like, you're supposed to kill these bad guys, right? And so it's like, I wanted to just do it. And the fact that he, like, makes and shifts his way all the way to becoming the Pope in the game, in the Templar made that final fight with him just such an epic fight, and such a, like, plot twist, in my opinion, with how it ended, all the way, like, it's just so well done. Like, I try not to spoil things, even though the game's, you know, been for many, many years out there. But, like, he just did so much that it just, like, for that game, I really feel like, as much as I love Assassin's Creed, and you know this, P, I'm a huge Assassin's Creed fan, I truly don't think that I would be as big of an Assassin's Creed fan if it wasn't for him and his portrayal in Assassin's Creed 2, where, like, I got so invested in, like, I want to see this guy meet his downfall. And I feel like that literally, you know, captured me to becoming an Assassin's Creed fan, because I really liked Assassin's Creed 1, but, like, Assassin's Creed 2 took it to a whole nother level. And so, like, he's definitely the next one that's on my list.
That's a really good one. Yeah, it's really interesting when you go back and think about, like, some of these villains and, like, how, like, they needed to be there to have as big, they have almost as big, if not a larger impact than the protagonists themselves. Because, like, I mean, on a movie comparison, have you ever seen The Professional?
No, I have not.
Let me Google it, because I forgot the guys. The Professional is a movie, little bit weird, because Natalie Portman's in the movie and her character is, like, supposed to be a teenage girl, and she has a crush on the main character named Leon, who's an assassin. Really, really good, really badass movie, really good action movie. But the thing everybody remembers it for is for Gary Oldman's portrayal of the main antagonist, who's a corrupt cop, basically selling drugs and stuff like that. And so many, when you watch it, if you've seen a lot of action movies or just, like, drama movies in general, you will see his portrayal is like, oh, I've seen this happen a lot of different other movies and a lot of different other villains in these kind of roles. And it's very interesting because he's kind of just a lunatic, the way he portrays a character. But this is a tangent. But you'll notice that, like, when you go back and watch some other movies that are, like, in similar, like, veins, like, wow, this is just basically kind of Gary Oldman's character and stuff like that. And it's one of the reasons why Gary Oldman's, like, I'm such a big fan of his in terms of his acting. It's just like, oh, okay. Like, he's really good in a lot of the roles that he's done. So, anyway, moving along, I'm going to go back to Final Fantasy because I'm a jerk. I had to bring up my, I had to bring up my favorite game of all time in this.
I knew this Final was going to be here.
Yeah. Kuja. I had to bring up Kuja. Kuja is an interesting, villainous character to me, and it's on my list. Specifically because, I had similar vibes with you when you're talking about Rodrigo, of when you actually finally beat him, because you never actually get to confront him. He's always like ahead of the game. He's always knows what's going on better than you do, like the entire story. So when you finally get to the point where you actually beat the crap out of him, you get to you finally are able to do it, and it's really awesome. And then he transforms, goes trance and goes Super Saiyan, and then beats the crap out of you again. So you gotta go. It's like, I finally got a chance to get my hands on you, and you get away again. And then you go through, but through the whole process of the story, you kind of, like, learn about Kuja's past. You learn about Zidane's past, the main character, and you go and beat him again. And it's also fulfilling to beat him the second time until they put, like, some random, like, embodiment of death kind of at the end, which is like, oh, okay, weird.
Yep.
I was okay with it. I kind of enjoyed it, but it was just kind of like I feel like you're trying to go for a safer Sephiroth thing, but it doesn't make any sense here. So what are we doing anyway? But one of the things that's really resonated with me and cathartic for me is in the ending sequence, well, before the final sequence of the game, the last sequence of the fight with Kuja, everybody escapes, and then Zidane goes back to try to get to Kuja to let him know that he's not alone, which is a major theme in the story in general. And it's really cathartic because he goes, look, what you did was wrong, and I don't agree with it, and I would always try to stop you. But if I was in your shoes, I could see myself doing the same thing, so I get it throughout the story. Because basically, like, Kuja was made, and the moment that he was created, he was deemed a failure, and his life was basically tied to his replacement coming, which would have been Zidane. I mean, I'm spoiling the story, sure, whatever. So, like, oh, a lot of people, one of their big things is, like, I want to leave a mark on society, I want to leave a mark on the world, and kind of thing, and that's part of the reason why, like, feel a lot of people have kids and stuff like that. He's like, oh, I kind of sort of live on through you, and my ancestors live on through you and stuff like that kind of thing. But Cujo was just basically like, you're a failure, you're doomed to die, and all your anything you do is going to amount to nothing. So he wanted to try to figure out a way to do, you know, something that would amount to something. Unfortunately, that thing was like, you know, the end of the planet, end of the world as we know it. And the superheroes or the heroes had to stop him. But it's kind of like a thing where it's like, yeah, you're an asshole and you deserve to get your ass kicked. And it was really cool getting to kick your ass finally. But also like, yeah, you know what? I kind of get where you're coming from. You were given a Delta shit hand, and this you saw this as the only way out. And yeah, I think it kind of resonated with me in a lot of ways in that particular regard.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great choice there, because Kuja is really awesome. I loved my time when I played through Final Fantasy IX and like how his character develops, because like at first he's kind of like, how he came across for me, like at first he's like this, in a sense, like this high wisdom character who like you know is the bad guy, but it's kind of like he's like teetering on like, oh, this is just like, you know, the way of the world and all that jazz, and he's just kind of like this, like, you know, almost like going with the flow, like I said, like wisdom person. But then there's like that shift where all of a sudden he turns into this like sadistic, all-powerful type character, and like you said, is just basically like hell-bent on I'm destroying everything and I don't care who gets in my way because you're gonna die. And so like, yes, great character, definitely one of the better villains that Final Fantasy has had across their time. So before I get back to Final Fantasy, I'm actually going to go to a different game.
That's my last one, so I won't ruin it anymore.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm gonna save my last Final Fantasy for the final one. But I'm going to go with one that it's one of those things where, and Pete, like, you probably won't know who I'm about to talk about, but you'll, like, immediately go, oh, it makes sense that you would include something from that in here, because I'm going to include one of my one of the main bad guys from one of my all-time favorite games, and that is Duragon C. Mikado from The Bouncer. So, Duragon C. Mikado is the main villain in The Bouncer. You know, just to give a quick backstory, basically he is the CEO of the Mikado group, and he takes on the Mikado name. So he's not actually originally a Mikado, but he takes on the name after he basically gets asked by the original CEO to take on the name and become the successor for it. And Duragon, he is such a freaking hard fight, but you fight him multiple times in different stages and forms, in a sense, is the way I'd call it. And one of the things that I freaking loved is, like, you fight this, like, panther early on in the story. And like later you find out that's fucking Mikado. Like, it was like, what the hell? Like, so that was also like one of the first in my mind's like, this is really sick that like this dude can also turn into a panther, which, you know, there is story, aspects that kind of lead to why that happens, but you know, I'm not going to get into that in here. But Mikado's look, again, similar in nature to what I've talked about before. Like, I just loved the look of his character, the portrayal of him, his kind of demeanor, his body, like, but like the ultimate or the last fight with him, you fight him, I think it's three times, and like each time in that final stage, he basically changes how he appears and looks. And so, like, you know, it's not necessarily like, you know, the Final Fantasy type fight where it's like you fight them in one stage and then they like transform or like look kind of like different and then they fight and then they like transform into like this ultimate being and you fight them again. It's more so like the fight is more like it is him transforming in a sense, but it's him like getting more serious about the fight. Like originally he's like very, you know, confident in his abilities. So, like, the first time you fight him in that final phase, he's kind of, like, he fights you, but he's, like, confident he'll win. And then when you strike him down, he's like, all right, I guess I need to try a little bit harder. So then you fight him again, and you strike him down. And then the final time, he's like, all right, I'm going to fight very serious now, and we're going to do this. And, like, And obviously you know triumph again to obviously win the game. But like, it's similar to what I said before, like, but the Bouncer has so many really great villains, in my opinion. Like, there are so many that I could have chosen for this, but the fact of like Mikado's story, which does get told throughout the game, and that those final, that like boss rush basically at the end stuck out so much that I think it's partially, again, why I love the game so much. And so I had to include him in here. It's one of those, I really hope that Sony finally adds that to like the PS Plus at some point so I can go back and play it, even though I have it, you know, on my shelf back here. But like, I'd love to like not have to pull out my PS2 to play it. Like, I just want to play it, you know, yeah, right, on the system. So, and I want more people to play it because it's an awesome game. But I highly doubt it'll ever get there since a lot of people don't really think the game is great. But yeah, Duragon C. Mikado is awesome.
That's really fascinating and interesting. One of the things that's kind of funny, honestly, is how much we're, I wouldn't say forced, but we're kind of like, I guess I can't really think of a better word. We're forced to accept like these supervillains are like super powerful for things they do outside of combat, but you end up beating them several times. That's one of the things I actually, I'm bringing up Final Fantasy IX really quick. That's one of the things I really appreciate about Beatrix in Final Fantasy IX, because like she's presented as this, all-powerful warrior that you can't beat, and every time you fight her, like the match will end and you will like technically win by not dying, but she is clearly the one standing at the end of every fight. And it's not criticizing your pick, like there's so many times where it's just like, oh, we beat the boss, oh, now I'm gonna try hard, oh, now I'm actually gonna try hard kind of thing. And it's like, so that's actually going to come up in not the next pick, but the final pick for mine. My next pick, personally, is who doesn't like a good fallen hero story, Jeremy? Do you not like good fallen hero stories?
Or
do you
hate fallen hero stories, bro. Come on.
Are you being legitimate?
No, I'm joking. Obviously, it's
okay. I thought you were being sarcastic. All right, so my pick, I'm actually cheating here. My pick, and I'm saying I'm cheating because I'd never actually fought him in a boss fight because I stopped playing World of Warcraft before he is actually a boss fight. Prince Arthas is my pick. I played more of Warcraft 3, Reigns of Chaos, and the Frozen Throne as Arthas than I did fighting against him. Prince Arthas is my number two on best villains. His story is probably, outside of my top one, one of my favorite villain fallen hero story. Actually, the top one isn't really a fallen hero story technically. He's probably my favorite fallen hero story in like all of video games. The especially because you play through the progression of how he gets to where he is, and you just see like how his ideologies are twisted. You even at the beginning of the game, the way it's set up, even the first couple of missions, you see where like, yes, he's a protagonist and a good guy at the beginning of Warcraft 3, Reigns of Chaos. But you see there's like, it's similar to Anakin Skywalker. You see that there's a little something there that if just twisted wrong, could be possibly just made into something really bad. And that's what ends up happening. His drive and desire to fulfill like his father's to be like as good as his father, to be as good as his hero Uther Lightbringer, to just be like to just accomplish everything. But he's so single-minded and focused on accomplishing things that it ends up being his downfall by the end of the human campaign, and he ends up being turned into a Death Knight in service to the Lich King. And the way he gets there, and then you see all the bad things that he does after the fact, where he leads to the downfall of the Lordaeron, he leads to the downfall of Silvermoon and the elves, and just basically like the entire continent in the West, where you've played your first two Warcraft games, is just completely demolished and devastated and just ruined by essentially Arthas himself, like in control, under the control of the Lich King and in control of the undead hordes, but essentially just takes over an entire continent just like because of his downfall. And then you get to I like I said, I didn't play it myself, I've only like seen like videos of it. you get to the storyline of the third expansion, I believe, Wrath of the Lich King, in World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to that and you finally get to fight him as Arthas, and finally get to beat him. And just watching the way that storyline unfolds and all that is just really great. But specifically the way he's presented in Reign of Chaos and Frozen Throne, that last video of the Frozen Throne, as he's the last vestiges of his like humanity are like clawing at the back of his mind to like, don't do this. You can still turn back. And at the end, he still chooses, I'm Arthas the Death Knight. I'm Arthas the Lich King. That whole sequence of just him climbing up the mountain to finally actually meet the Frozen Throne, the namesake, is just so just, it's so amazing and so awesome. And so, you know, melancholic, because, you know, he always had a choice. He always had a choice to do something different. But he just was so focused on accomplishing whatever goal was in the front of his mind that he just would never change his mind and would never turn around, and it ended up being his downfall and ended up leading to his death ultimately. So
yeah,
really fantastic storytelling.
Actually, that's a great choice. And I didn't even think about it, but like hearing you talk about it, it's like, man, I forgot how much I did really like that stuff. Now, I will say, you know, I never played Warcraft 1 and 2, so like I never had that backstory, but I played the heck out of Warcraft 3. We talked about this, you know, of course, and I also played the heck out of World of Warcraft, which Wrath of the Lich King was the second expansion, but I, you know, as you're in your mind, it was like you're trying to think of
it's the third game, but it's the second correct expansion.
Yeah, because right? The first expansion was Burning Crusade, and then Wrath of the Lich King was the second one. And I played through Wrath of the Lich King on there, and so I remember that fight with Archerus, and it was like, holy crap, it was awesome, and I loved it. And exactly as you said, like in the Warcraft Reigns of Chaos and Frozen Throne, like I loved, like in a sense, seeing him descend. You know, that was such a great story to have detailed. And so, yeah, great choice. I actually really like that one. So for my final one, and I'm gonna just give the quick precursor with, some people may not have played this game. Some people may heavily disagree with me, but I'm going to say first and foremost, in my opinion, this is, back to Final Fantasy. This is one of, if not, in my opinion, the most underrated villains in Final Fantasy. I absolutely love this villain, and his story and in the way he was presented. And that is Caius Balad from Final Fantasy 13-2. So why I say a lot of people may not have played this one is, of course, Final Fantasy 13, while it was, it sold extremely well and has now, like many years later, has gotten a lot of praise. But back at the time that it released, a lot of people didn't like it. And so 13-2, of course, being a spinoff of it, or a continuation, I should say, of the story. There might have been a number of people who didn't play it, but for peeling back the curtain a little bit, 13-2's commercial is what actually made me go back and play 13, because I didn't own it at the time, but I, in college, kept seeing the commercial for 13-2, and I was just, like, in love with what I saw. So I legitimately, the day that 13-2 came out, I went to my local GameStop, I bought Final Fantasy 13, Final Fantasy 13-2, and Final Fantasy 13-2's Collector Edition Strategy Guide, which still sits on my shelf behind me. But of course, I was like, I got to play 13 first. I didn't play 13-2 till a year later, because it took me a while. Like, basically, I finally beat 13, and then it took me a while to finally open up 13-2 and play it. And everything about Caius, I fucking loved, man. His look, the way he looks, he's like, he has this like black and purple armor, this really big, like awesome looking, like almost like demonic type sword. Again, the portrayal, the body language of his character, how he delivers himself. You know, I don't exactly know who did the voice acting for him. So Liam O'Brien, you know, he's a famous voice actor. And for those that don't like quickly recognize him, he's part of the Critical Role team. He did such an amazing job with the voice acting of Caius. But Caius, the whole drive of Caius, which is, I think, like what resonated with me so much, is that, like, it's not like Caius is inherently a bad person. And I am a sucker for the antagonists who have, like, that and I'm having a brain fart right now on the term that I'm actually looking for. But basically, when there is that moral dilemma that's inside the main antagonist, like, that's those antagonists I'm a sucker for. And for Caius, like, the reason he does the things that he does, it's not for, like, some ultimate gain of him wanting to, like, destroy the world or him wanting to have ultimate power. I mean, of course, he does want to destroy the world, like, in technical terms, right? But it's not like he wants ultimate power. He wants to show his strength. He does, you know, all these things. It comes down to the fact that Caius is eternal. Caius cannot die, technically speaking. And he was originally supposed to be the guardian for a character called Yule, who is a Sirius. And Yule is basically, as I said, is a Sirius of what's called the Grand Pulse Lassie. And so, like, there's so much context I have to give there that I'm not going to spend the time to do it. But just understanding is basically Yule is supposed to be this, like, character for this, like, higher god being that's there. But the problem with Yule is that Yule is a Sirius, but as soon as she uses her Sirius powers, she dies. It basically kills her right away. Like, she dies 5 minutes roughly after she utilizes it. And she does not know when it's going to happen, when she's going to utilize it or anything. But she's going to see, like, basically she'll see a vision. She'll be able to convey what that vision is. And then she dies because she's fulfilled her purpose. And that's what Grand Pulse does. And so originally Caius was supposed to be the guardian for her to protect her until she sees her vision and then be the next protector for the next Yule. But of course, he falls in love with Yule. Not like in, like, I want to, like, be her lover, but it's like, I love Yule like it's my family. And he goes through an eternal life of watching this character die over and over and over again. And each Yule that ever comes to being, because they're born and they look exactly the same, do not share memories. So they do not know who is the other one or who is the next person. It's basically they relearn who Caius is. They know that Caius is supposed to protect them, but they relearn and they grow an affection with Yule. And each Yule is different. And Caius finally, in a sense, it breaks him. It breaks him to the point of, I need to die because I cannot sustain this life. But if he dies, the world ends. And that's what the driving point of Final Fantasy 13-2 is. And I loved it. I loved it so much because, again, like, all he does is he basically chases you around as the main character and says, you need to kill me. And of course, at first they're like, no, we're not, like, we don't want to kill you, right? So then he finally goes, fine then, if you won't kill me, I will make you want to kill me. And that's when he starts doing all these bad things to try and drive that thing to happen. And the ending, I'm not going to spoil it, but, like, the ending fight with Caius and how it all unfolds is phenomenal. I will never, like, it is one of my most beloved, it sounds weird when I say this, but, like, playing Final Fantasy 13-2 was one of my most beloved summers that I did. Because, like, I spent basically all summer playing this game. I 100% perfected it. And it was so phenomenal that, like, Caius is amazing. And I wish more people, like, either experienced it or gave Caius the flowers that he deserves as a villain. So I was like, he had to be on this list for me.
There's two games now that you made me want to go. Actually, I guess technically three because I still need to finish 13. But I want to try 12-0 Zodiac Age now. I bought it and I never actually played it. 13-2, which I never played, and then go back and finish 13 so I know what's going on. So, I mean, you convinced me to try to give it a shot. We'll see if I have time. you were just talking about playing all summer. remember when I used to be able to do that? Can't do that anymore. So
yeah. Well, for the record, Pete, actually, you would like might remember this is the summer that I played that was when I was hired at our TV station WGEM, and I lived in the apartment upstairs. So like I would basically, I would work. And then I would get on the elevator, go upstairs, and start playing this game. And I loved it. It's, again, one of my, my fondest memories.
I'm going to be honest. There's a lot of times I miss those days.
Yeah, I feel you. Anyway. I feel you.
Anyway, so I'm going to go to my favorite villain. It's my favorite villain of all time. One of the reasons why this series is part, two of my triumvirate, shall we say, of the, my favorite games of all time. Galleon. The main antagonist of Lunar, Silver Star Story, all that. He is the Magic Emperor. The first game, the Sega CD one, he's kind of mostly generic, supremely badass, but mostly a generic villain. So the story, a quick recap of the story of Lunar. There's a goddess named Althena who lords over everybody, lords over everything. And it changes slightly from game to game, but in general, she gets reincarnated as a human being. And like every time she does, she loses her memories. In the original game, it's just a part of her life cycle. In the subsequent games from the PlayStation Saturn one and then on, it's she does it for storyline reasons, specifically to basically save the planet. In general, it's she learns that the people that followed her and believed in her and held their faith to her were happy but not satisfied. And the idea that she came up with was like, I'm going to let you do your thing by yourself, and I'm not going to like lord over you anymore. You're actually going to be free people. You're not going to have to just devote your service to me, just be good individuals and things like that. Well, in the original game, Galleon is just like, I'm going to take over the world now because there's no goddess, and I'm going to become a god. He does that in the subsequent games, Silver Star Story onward. But the reason why he does that is less, haha, I just want to be all powerful and all in control, and more, how can you believe these people when they do such bad things all the time? They need somebody in charge of them to guide them. So since you chose to denounce that role, I'm going to take on that role instead, then fine, if that's the case. Which is in stark contrast to his best friend, Dine, who is the Dragon Master, basically the superhero of the world. Before you, Galleon and Dine were best friends. And Dine and Althena, you could not really conspired, but that's kind of the way Galleon sees it, to basically get rid of the goddess and somebody to guide and help the people along. And he thought that was wrong, and it always stuck in his craw. Also, in the first game, part of the reason why he wanted to become God was vengeance, because Dine supposedly died, even though he doesn't actually die. He's just lost all his powers, essentially. And then in the other ones, he just couldn't, in the other subsequent games, he just couldn't understand it. Just like, how do you believe in these people that are just so like, you know, they have racism, they have poverty, there's illness, there's war, like all this stuff going on. So he becomes a god. You end up going through the storyline. You end up defeating him. It does have the one thing where we were talking about earlier where it's like, oh, well, they're more powerful than you, but you always seem to beat them even though you fight them multiple times. It's kind of like the pro wrestling thing where like, oh, you beat them three times, but like, I still am the challenger. It's like, well, are you though? in this game, you beat him as the Magic Emperor, but it turns out that was supposed to be like an after image of his. And then he fights you and it's in a hopeless boss fight thing where he just demolishes you and just steamrolls you. And then you come back and beat him in the rubber match, essentially. So that happens and that's his story. You finally beat him. It's not really a general, but it's the, we believe in humanity. You don't believe in humanity. What the hell is wrong with you? Like, if we work together, we can get through it. Then we go and we have the redemption arc, sort of. It is a redemption arc, but you don't really learn about it until the very end of Lunar 2 Eternal Blue. I've said before, Lunar 2 and Lunar are 1,000 years apart, and there's very little interaction between the two stories, other than there's a decent part with Althina that's interacted with it. But the only character you actually meet, one of the two characters you actually meet from the original game, is Galleon. He's been resurrected. He's technically undead at this point by the evil god Zophar. And he's standing in the hero's way the entire time. He's the new dragon master. And so he's got all his powers as magic, the magic emperor from his previous life, and now he's also a dragon master. Well, it turns out he's working behind the scenes to actually help your character, because he's finally figured out and understood, oh, this society has proceeded for 1,000 years after Althine has not been around, after Dine's been gone, after all the heroes have kind of faded away. They didn't need a god. I get it now. I understand why you had this faith in these people. So he comes in, and it's really, really impressive writing, where the hero party has lost one of their characters. They've lost all hope. They don't believe in themselves anymore. And he comes in, he's like, all right, fine. Well, I'm just going to beat the crap out of you and like end it right now. And you're never going to beat Zophar. Zophar's going to take over the world and suck it dry. But it's really just a pretense to like basically put the fire of and the fight back in them, because so he goes from not believing in humanity and trying to be a guide for them to actually being a guide for them, but because he believes in humanity in the end of the Lunar 2. And they're all just like, you have to, and as he's dying in the second game, he's like, you have to come with us. Why did you sacrifice yourself? We could have fought so far together. It's like, Zophar basically is in control of me because he's the one who resurrected me. Now that he knows that I've betrayed him, he's going to kill me anyway. So like, I had to do something to try to get you guys back on your feet to believe in yourselves to go and actually do the fight. And his whole story arc, Prince Arthas is a great one of a fallen hero. This one is a great fallen hero, but then a redemption at the end. I guess it's kind of like a Darth Vader kind of thing when you think about it, because, you know, Darth Vader does the redemption thing by killing an old man at the end of the Return of the Jedi. he does the redemption thing by doing the exact same thing that got him not redeemed in the first place. Got him unredeemed in the first place. But so that's my favorite villain. It's part of the reason why that series is I'm really fond of it. I'm really happy with it. And I love going back and playing with playing the games themselves.
I gotta play Lunar at some point. You always talk about it.
I really want them to port them. They are so good. It's such good storytelling. The gameplay is really basic, I would say.
Yeah.
But the storytelling, I love the storytelling, and I love the jokes and the humor also is just like right up my alley. But
yeah,
that's a different thing.
Yeah, I want to play it at some point. I do know you said that the first one did get ported to iOS. The second one hasn't been ported anywhere, right? It's still only
Been ported since PlayStation. I don't think they've made a remake. They keep remaking the first one. I don't think they've done the second Lunar 2 since the PlayStation port.
Yeah, that's what I thought I remember you saying before. So of course that's where we will, you know, potentially there's an emulator out there that maybe, you know, illegally you will play.
Yeah, emulator you could find it easily, sure.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm not trying to tell you anything illegally that you can or cannot do, but like there may be things out there that you can use those to play the second one. But yeah, you didn't hear it from us. Okay.
Yeah, we're not here to promote circumventing the system. Yes, we are.
So anyway, maybe one of these days we'll get a port or a remake of both of them. Maybe we'll get them a two-in-one, a twofer, some might say. But we don't know when that's going to happen. That'll probably happen sometime in the way, way future. Who knows? But we do know what's coming out this week, and so we're going to tell you all about those games that are coming out. And that starts with Tuesday, April 11th. You have Sherlock Holmes, The Awakened, the remake for PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Tron Identity for Switch and PC. Process of Elimination for PS4 and Switch. Switch. On Wednesday, April 12th, you have Ghostwire Tokyo for Xbox Series. That's coming to Game Pass. Murdered Muses for Xbox Series, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Rusted Moss for PC. Wild Frost for Switch and PC. Thursday, April 13th, you have A Night in the Attic for PC VR, Hunt the Night for PC, Kill It with Fire VR for PSVR, PSVR 2, and PC VR, A Shardpunk Verminfall for PC, Total War Warhammer 3 Forge of the Chaos Dwarfs for DLC, PC, Trinity Fusion for PC, Voodolls for PC. And then Friday, April 14th, you have Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection for PS4, Switch, and PC, and De Exit for PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Pete, any of these catching your attention?
Nah, not really. I feel bad, but most of these didn't really vibe or jive with me this week. The two I'm going to pick are Ghostwire Tokyo, mostly because it's coming to the Game Pass, and then Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection because it's Mega Man. So those are the two picks I'm looking at. I said, I hope you like some of these games, but looking at some of the stuff, I just wasn't really for me this week, unfortunately.
For me, both of the other ones outside of what you said come on Tuesday, and that's Tron Identity. That one looked pretty cool with the story-driven aspect that you're going to have with that one. And then Process of Elimination. I've actually been really interested in this game for quite a while when it got announced. And there is a demo out for people to play. I do have it downloaded on my PS5. I just haven't booted it up just yet. And so I'm looking forward to trying out that demo and seeing if it serves the type of game that I think it will, because obviously if it does, then I'm more interested in it. But Pete, that is all that we have here for the One More Game podcast. So before we send our listeners off into the rest of the weekend and into the work week, is there anything you want to leave them with?
Happy Easter for those that celebrate it. I really enjoyed this episode. It was a lot of fun having this conversation. So now come back and do it again next time.
Heck yeah, we'll do it next time. And like I said, we have some pretty good ideas for some future ones to expand upon this discussion. But everybody, that is all that we have here for the One More Game podcast. So I've been one of your co-hosts, Jeremy Culver, a.k.a. Darcy. This has been the California Thirst Quencher, Pete Legia, and we really enjoy bringing this to you. So as always, everybody, stay hydrated, stay healthy, stay safe, and keep on gaming. We'll see you all on the next episode.